Still driving.
Bring it on. Want some, get some. Can I get a hell yeah?
Yes, I am a pirate.
You have to go with the pirates, because of course they have cannons and everything.
It's a pirate's life for me.
Be proud of who you are and what you are. You're a pirate.
This is a first down. Pirate.
Because when you're in East Carolina, you go for it. Well, you don't coach at East Carolina, you don't come to East Carolina, you don't play at East Carolina with a weak heart. Write it!
I think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. It was deafening in there.
Whoever from Omaha, I can promise you that.
Hit it, crumple all night long in Eastern North Carolina!
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
All right, welcome in to the Pirate Football Playback as the Pirates get the big victory over Army this week. And it feels like an eternity ago. I'll bring in Mr. Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you?
What's going on, guys? Yeah, Thursday. It does seem like a while ago, actually. But good win Thursday night against Army. Dominant performance, 28-6. Defense played lights out. Offense played really well in the first half. Drive solid in the second half. I didn't think we passed the ball enough. We'll get into the details of the game as it goes on, but very, very dominant performance by the defense.
Yeah, what's up? What's up, Matt Semenza?
What's up, guys? Hey, happy to get the conference win, especially against an academy. I think two sides to the coin. You have a defense that's playing really good football right now. Played very physical the other night and definitely carried that team to win. And right now, offensively, you have a team that's in a little bit of disarray and trying to find their identity. So, but hey, great win, and looking forward to breaking it down tonight.
No doubt. Stevie Fly, brother, what's up?
What was that?
I don't know.
That wasn't me. That wasn't me.
I'm not going to.
What's
Mike
up, guys?
Stevie.
How's everybody doing tonight? I'm hanging in the big metropolis tonight.
Yeah, from commissioner to commissioner, I know you're doing well. And what did you think about the Pirate win on Thursday night against Army?
Should have been a lot worse than it was. Should have been, I mean, yeah. 4 points left on the board. I know we'll talk about Kyle's already mentioned drive stalling and turnovers in the red zone. And I know Johnny's got some good stats. He laid it out there on another show the other night we were listening to. So Johnny's going to hit us with some good stats tonight.
I see what you did there, Stevie.
What did I do?
The other show.
Yeah.
Oh, what? What are you talking about? I mean, they didn't mention our name.
I found out that Kyle and Johnny are Avengers. I didn't know that.
Well, so. We are the Avengers. We're the Avengers of Pirates of Nations. We got Johnny stats here. Johnny, what did you think of the game quickly as we open up here Thursday night?
Yeah, obviously I was happy with the results. I thought they did, not only on the field, but the whole presentation for military appreciation was done very well. I feel like ECU, I feel like the student body is very patriotic, more so than maybe some other schools that I've attended football games at. I don't know. I just got that impression, and that made me feel good. But on the field, we'll talk about it later. But, yeah, very happy. And I hate Thursday games normally, but it allowed me to watch football on Saturday from 12 to 12. So that was good.
JR, you mentioned about the student body being more patriotic. Two things on that. One, I'll tell you off the air because I want to get into it on the air, that some stats I looked up. But the you like stats, you'll like this. And the other thing is, I thought the other night, and maybe it was just because we were winning that it felt this way to me, but I didn't feel like they went too over the top to the point where the patriotic stuff made the home field advantage go away. I thought very much, particularly in the first half where the crowd went home, we still had the home field advantage. It was very patriotic, very, appreciative, I guess, towards the military. But I thought sometimes in the past, you know, when we played Navy, we've gone too over the top with it, where it took our home field advantage away. But then again, maybe it was just because we were getting our asses kicked by Navy. I felt that way.
I think that's definitely the case, Kyle, because we've sat through that. What was it, 2010 miserable 76 to whatever it was against Navy?
2010, and then Scotty's, God, was it Scotty's first year or his second year? One of Scotty's years was about as bad as that 1-10.
Yeah.
People just always talk about the 1-10 because it sticks out so much.
Yeah, but I tell you what, really happy for the Pirates. And, guys, one of the things before we break it down, I just was thinking about this as I was driving home, because heading home to, like, I'm still recovering from the Army game. 12:30 is when I got home on early Friday morning, and then I had to work on Friday. But anyway, one of the things I thought about, you look at this team, we're almost halfway through the season, which is hard to believe, by the way. After we play Tulane, it'll be the first half of the season, then we move in the second half of the season. But this team has not played a complete game, and we find ourselves at 3-2. And I'm not making excuses for – I'm not saying I'm happy being 3-2. But considering they haven't played a complete game and we're not at our ceiling, we're not – we haven't peaked just yet, at least I hope. we have a chance to do a lot of special things still in front of us. And one of these days when we do play a complete game, it'll really hit us between the eyes, don't you think?
Well, we're going to have to do that against Tulane. We got a whole week to even get ready for that one, so we don't have to really get into that yet. But to beat some of the better teams in our conference, like Tulane, like Memphis, we're going to have to play a complete game. Matt will get into this in a little bit, but I think at least my assumption is the reason we keep running the ball, and the passing game was there all night Saturday or Thursday, and we didn't go back to it with the deep balls like we did early, and we just ran the ball. And I think they're just determined to establish the run because they know we're going to need it against the better teams.
Yeah.
So I think that's what they're doing. But, Matt, we'll go ahead and get into this if you're in a good spot to talk about it, because it's I just brought up the running game. But Matt had an interesting observation about our running backs and our running game. Matt, do you want to go ahead and talk about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, this has definitely been something that's been on my mind. And, you know, I was talking about this a lot with a lot of different former players, trying to get a better understanding of why. You know, when you look at the Coastal game and then the game versus Army, guys, those are two games that should have been put away by halftime. And I think what prevented that from happening was the insistence on just running the football, just lining up and running the football. And it's almost like a little bit of a stubbornness right now. It's like, we're going to run the football come hell or high water. And I think because of that, you put yourself in a situation where, you know, you're halfway through the third quarter in both of those games, and it's anybody's game when you should have had it put away. So I'd like to see, let's put the foot down on the throat and let's finish teams before we start experimenting too much. But yeah, Kyle, I think what you're referring to, observation I've made watching a lot of running backs, the way they're coached around college football, especially yesterday, just like you, JR, I watched all day, but our running backs are taught to hit the hole at a million miles an hour, go straight ahead, hit the hole as hard as possible. And I think that really hurts their ability to cut and use any vision whatsoever. And I'd like to see a little more maybe delay, you know, mesh, and the ability for our running backs to get to the line of scrimmage in a little more of a delay manner, where they have the ability to jump step or jump cut, read the defense, use their vision. Because if you guys go back and look at that film the other night, there were so many rushing yards left on the field because our running backs are taught to hit the hole at a million miles an hour, and they're just not able to use their vision. So, hopefully I'm explaining that, what I see. What do you guys – have you guys noticed that?
I have, JR. I have,
heard that a lot, yeah.
I have, Matt. And I think the reason they're coaching it that way, in theory, if you've got a good offensive line and you're going fast and you hit that hole at a million miles an hour and then you can get into open space, then cut. But our line is not good enough to create these big holes. So you got to look where that hole is, you know, and then adjust accordingly. Cut to the left, cut to the right. We just seem to hit the hole and go straight up the middle. And I'm with you. I think I understand why they're coaching it that way, and I think it has to do with our tempo offense and just go, go, go. Just hit the hole, don't think, just go. But you sometimes you got to look. You got to use your vision. You got to cut left, cut right. You know, think about, and I know this is going to sound funny, but it's a good analogy. Dave, you like analogies. So think of it like making love to a woman. So sometimes you want to hit that hole 100 miles an hour and just go, go, go. And sometimes you just need to ease in there and nest your way a little left, a little right, you know, because
I have children listening. So keep going.
Tell them to leave the room. You just got to kind of ease your way in there. It really is like that. It's a good analogy. And, you know, sometimes it's like that. You don't need to hit it 100 miles an hour. You need to kind of, you know, ease your way in, left, right. Which way do I need to go?
Yeah. Do y'all feel like
Say what, Matt?
I was going to say
a little bit.
Do y'all feel like Caton is not running as much as he used to? UAB and East Carolina are the only two schools in the American that don't have a quarterback rush for 10 yards or longer. Memphis has, you know, the teams at the top, Memphis 15, Navy 15, Tulane 12, USF 6, North Texas 4. I mean, we have zero. I mean, you know, he had a big game against State on the ground. I think FAU, he had a nice game too on the ground last season, I'm talking about. So is there a reason why? Because I think that might make it a little easier for the running backs if he was a threat to run as well, but he really is not.
Yeah, and he has the ability. I don't know. I don't know if he's being coached not to run it as much. If it goes back to the injury he had last year, I don't know what it is. But, you know, you would think with Mike Wright on the team, we would see Hauser run it more because we have a little bit more confidence, I would think, in the backup quarterback. And you know, I'm surprised we haven't utilized Mike Wright in the run game a little more. But I am surprised we haven't seen Caton run the ball more. And, JR, that makes me wonder if they don't have confidence in Mike Wright or anybody else to run this offense right now.
It could be, Kyle. I have an interesting stat on the rushing game. I thought Matt would like this one. Okay, so we only have 7 rushing plays of 15 yards or longer the entire season. 7. And they're by 7 different players. Like, nobody on this team has more than one rushing, more than one rush over 15 yards. That's a crazy stat that I just can't figure that one out either, why it is as it is.
That is an interesting one, JR. And, like, I think that's just because of how much we're rotating backs. You know, like, if you just go back to that Coastal game, I think we rotated 5 different backs. So I think that has a big thing to do with it. Plus, just at times, kind of the inability to establish a consistent running game. But that's a pretty you don't see that kind of stat very often.
Yeah, I think, you know, it really – particularly, you know, Montgomery, and I don't know if it's a thing where he's the smallest back and they don't think he's durable enough to be the every down back. But, you know, I know Montgomery on paper had the most carries in the game the other night, but he wasn't used very much in the second half at all. He, you know, a little bit sparingly, but, you know, it was primarily the kid from Houston. I can never remember his name to save my life, Parker Jenkins. It was primarily Parker Jenkins, and then used Gunn some in the fourth, but Montgomery is the one to me that has the most ability to break off the big runs. And the good thing about it is, you know, you look at this offense and you have the pieces. You have the quarterback, you have the receivers, you have some quality running backs. The O-line's a bit of a work in progress, but I do think they're, you know, getting better game by game, and this off week should help things. So the pieces are there. I think two things, again, I touched on it earlier. I think a bit of the problem on offense is they're trying so hard to establish the run because they know we're going to need it. And then I think the other thing is kind of what you guys talked about just then is not just at running back, but at receiver, et cetera. I think we're playing too many players.
Yeah.
I think they think it's going to pay off later in the year, and it very well might. We may be fresher late in the season than everybody else. But right now, I think it's keeping us from getting into a rhythm at times.
Well, that's just like if you look at the last two or three games. I know we've talked about it from game one. Petaway, where was he at from game one? And then all of a sudden the other night, they're trying to get him in the offense. And then somebody else just is taken totally out of the offense. Wright, after having that good game against Coastal, you didn't see him at all against BYU. So, I mean, I don't understand the rhyme and the reason to what he's doing here with the offense, to tell you the truth. Because it just seems like – it's almost like – I know it was mentioned on another show trying to keep everybody happy so they won't transfer out of the transfer portal, which was a joke. But I just don't understand why you can't – unless you're trying to figure – still trying to figure out who you want to be in that regular rotation. I just don't understand what he's doing there.
Stevie, I kind of really believe – And I'd like to ask, you know, I have an opportunity to ask JDB this, and maybe one of these press conferences, post-game press conferences Dave's at, or either Alan Vick can ask Blake Harrell, is the amount of players we're rotating on offense have to do with trying to be fresher later in the year by playing so many players? That's the only thing to me that makes logical sense.
And you know what the counterpoint to that would be, Kyle? And this is not – I'm not saying this to you, but I'm saying this more towards if
– yeah, because I don't think it's a good idea, Matt, so I know you're not saying it to me.
Yeah, so, like, the thing is this, you know, if you put those games away in the first half, guess what? Guess who gets to play most of the whole second half? Your backup.
Yeah, and you can make the argument, Matt, that, well, you know what, these guys are playing now against Coastal or, you know, even against Army particularly, you know, while the game's still on the line, so they're getting quality reps. So I guess you can make that argument, but – let's not risk losing a game, particularly the Army game. And I guess it does. If they are doing that, I guess it shows a lot of confidence in our defense. But, man, at some point, let's get one put away. Let's make it, you know, 35-6, and then let's work on that running game.
I agree, Kyle. And the 50 running plays, I mean, 22 passes to 50 runs. Here's a newsflash. We're a great passing team. That's not a problem. That's not something we need to try to correct. That's something we need to try to exploit. And he's not doing that. And he's like, you know, it's been said 100 times, but wow, we got up to a big lead. Now let's pound them. But I don't like, it's been said 1,000,000 times, but I just wish we would keep our foot on the pedal for a while longer and mix the running game in.
And I know everybody said Blake is letting John David Baker have full control of the offense, but you know, if Mike Houston was still here, we'd be screaming conservative Mike. Yeah. So I do wonder if Blake's having anything to do with this. Like, you know, he's an old school guy. He comes from a triple option background. If he wants to establish that damn run.
Good question.
It certainly seems like it. You know, it certainly seems like it. And again, you know, not to sound like a broken record, because I think we talked about this last week, but like, you know, everybody wants balance. That's a fact, right? You look at all the great teams. Think of the great teams in the NFL, right? When the Dallas Cowboys made their great run, you know, Aikman in the passing game.
But 21-50 ain't even – that's not balance.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is balance doesn't necessarily have to equate to a 50-50 split in play calling. You know, you could set up the run through the pass and – run for the same amount of yards when the game is over. So I think it's kind of odd to get hung up on how many the plays you're calling. Specific, are we running the ball equally to how many times we're passing it? And I agree that the mix the other night was very odd. Now, I got it in the fourth quarter when you're trying to hang on to that lead and just bleed clock. But up until that point, it just didn't make much sense.
Well, you know, Matt, I do wonder that, you know, I can kind of tell even going into this game, Blake had a lot of confidence in our defense against the triple option this year. And I do wonder if he knew that defense was going to shut Army down the whole game, particularly once he saw it in the first half. And he basically told JDB, hey, run the damn ball. Let's just not turn it over. And we got this one. I wonder that. Everybody's putting it on John David Baker. At the end of the day, Blake Harrell's the head coach. So, you know, he has overrule power to John. You know, he may have said, hey, defense is playing great. I have full confidence in defense is going to keep them shut down the whole game. We got a 3-score lead. Let's just run the rock and not turn it over.
Hello.
Hey, guys. yeah, let's get some comments in. By the way, I wanted to mention Cindy was mad at me, so because we're trying really hard to get as many people in as we can. But the good news is a good problem. We have a lot of people watching and listening because it's Pirate Football. And on top of that, we're winning. So, Cindy, I apologize.
It's also because me and JR are Avengers.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's why.
Avenger power.
But just the fact that I think a lot of people, what they're saying is, here's another thing, Matt. I wanted to get
you. Are you going to put any of the comments up, Dave?
Well, yeah, we can.
Hey, yeah. put Kenny Curlins up. He's got a good point there. We talked about this last week, too, about how many penalties there. And I think what Johnny, correct
me. Yeah, that is a good point, Kenny.
We have one penalty, right?
Two penalties.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we did a good job in a short week cutting down on that, cleaning that up.
Yeah, a lot of pre-snap penalties against BYU. A lot of them on first down and third down, key downs. And, you know, did we even get a pre-snap penalty? Were either one of the penalties called this week pre-snap?
The first penalty was that kick out of bounds, the kickoff out of bounds.
Okay.
We got it at the 35, and there was one more. Was that
the holding penalty? It was a holding penalty, wasn't it?
I think you're right.
But it was no pre-snap penalty, so that's really good.
There was definitely
no defensive penalties either.
Nope.
Yeah. Pre-snap penalties will kill you because you're just playing against yourself. You're helping the defense. And, you know, I don't mind effort penalties. A hold is going to happen. They're going to get called. I don't mind a PI penalty against an effort penalty. Pre-snap penalties is a lack of focus.
And another thing, did you guys hear my question to Tegan Wilk?
No.
No. What was it, Dave?
Sorry, I was choking there, so I muted myself. I asked him about how big of a difference it made, you know, having him out of the game against BYU. And talked about it. It is important because he is.
You mean question to Blake about Tegan Wilk?
No, you obviously don't come to press conferences. They interview players.
No, I don't come to press conferences, Dave. I have an inability to drive. You say shit like that, like I can just get there.
What are you talking about? There's a thing called the post game press conference. You're at the game.
Well, I'll tell Jessica that she can't get home and go to work the next day because I have to stay for the press conference.
I know. I would just say there's a reason.
Well, how about saying it a little different next time? That was unnecessary.
I'm just saying Tegan Wilk was there at the press conference. I asked him a question, and you're challenging me. That's why I said I was there.
Congratulations, you were there. I asked you, did you ask it to Blake or did you ask it to Tegan? That was a simple question. Didn't require that response.
Tegan. I said Tegan. I asked Tegan Wilk a question. I said that.
And I was asking for clarification.
Anyway, I was asking him about that very thing of he does talk to the guys in the backfield, and he also he said, I'm not going to say any more about how I feel about that call. But the reason I brought that up was the fact that you're making a good point, Kyle, about penalties, which I think is ludicrous on the whole. I'm not going down the rabbit hole of targeting. But that did play a big factor in the game as far as not having him in the game. And as far as our defense is concerned, it didn't, obviously, on the offensive side of the ball with all the ridiculous penalties we had with the false starts. But anyway...
You know, Dave, to that targeting thing, you know, because I like you guys, I watched probably 10 hours of football yesterday. And one thing I noticed is I actually really feel sorry for safeties in this day and age, because not only does the inconsistency vary game to game with targeting, like you'll watch two games and see the same exact type of hit. One game will call it a target, the other one won't. But it not only does it vary game to game, but it varies conference to conference. Now, the SEC, to me, lets their players get away with more. They let them play with a few less penalties. They don't just blow the whistle on those targetings as much as other conferences. I mean, look, we are definitely a different defense with Tegan Wilk on the field. He played a hell of a game against Army. I mean, he was coming downhill. He was hitting. And he was a perfect fit against Army the other night.
I agree. So was the other safety, Marley. And your boy, Matt, you put it in a group text that you really think Sam Danka is playing much better this season. He had a Great game. Great. He had the only sack. It's hard to sack Army. He had one, and he had a couple stops. He had a great game. And the two safeties were bringing it.
Absolutely. And when your safeties can get downhill against an option football team, that's a good sign. I mean, number one, they didn't hit any deep shots on us, which is what I always worry about when we play in academy, because they lull you to sleep, and then they usually find a way to put one over the top. Now, they did get one pass. We got very lucky because they dropped it. But sometimes you need a little luck. Look, I mean, God knows we've had our share of breaks against us over the years. So sometimes, you get a lucky break, but we didn't give up any deep shots. The one big play they had on offense was a jet sweep on their first possession of the second half, where our middle linebacker was just a little out of place by about a step, and they creased us there. But listen, really good job by that team. Physical. And I didn't mean to change this over to the defense until we were ready, but Wilk's name came up. Really physical, hard-hitting football, man. It was, the defense was fun to watch.
I agree.
And Johnny,
Go ahead.
I was going to throw this to you, to Johnny. I mentioned at the press conference, and help me out, because you're the stats guy, not me. But I did quick math. We've only given up in five games 67 points, which is 13.4 points a game. So I mentioned at the press conference, if you told me, my point is, if you told me that till this point, I know it's five games, I know it's not 12 games, but that we would only be giving up 13.4 points a game, I would have been really shocked. I would have thought that number.
Dave, you're going to win a lot of games at East Carolina with that number. And, you know, let's look at the BYU game. I mean, one of their touchdowns was off the pick, right? But the defense is definitely – look, I'll eat crow right now, because the entire offseason, my concern with this team was the defense. And I felt very good about what we had offensively. It's turned out that right now the defense is the strength of the team. So,
yeah. And I want to give credit to the defensive line and the linebackers. Army, when they didn't run on – when they didn't get to the edge, they got nothing. So I did it play by play. They had 179 yards when they got to the edge for 7-8 yards a carry. And when they went inside – they got 69 yards, which was 2.4 yards per carry, which is nothing. Army can't survive on 2.4 yards a carry up the gut. They can't. So I thought we did a tremendous job, which really limited what they could do.
And I think if you look at that, that may answer the question again, what I said earlier about why we ran the ball so much against Army. I go back to Blake. I'd be willing to bet you he told JDB, once we got that 3-touchdown lead, run the ball. They're not going to be able to score on us. Let's just don't turn it over, which, you know, it's a bit too conservative for my approach, but I'd be willing to bet you that conversation happened.
It may have. And, now, JR, you're the stats guy. What was what was Army's third down conversion rate offensively? I think I know it, but I
– oh, God.
See, now – that's the thing about being the stats guy. I don't have everything committed to memory. That's the problem. But
well, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, but
third down.
They were 2 of 15. They were 2 of 15.
Yeah.
All right. So that's a hell of a number. I mean, that's as good as it gets when you can hold a team to 2 of 15. On third down, right, Stevie? Yeah. I mean, how many games would you win as a coach? Did he help?
Oh,
team?
God. I would love that.
But I would interject one thing to that, Matt.
With Army, you got to look at fourth down.
Their third down really is not – it's almost like second down. But it's still a tremendous stat, and one that really, you know, helps you secure a victory for sure.
It's, speaking of fourth down, guy, fellas, on offense – Johnny, have we, our number, not to be Debbie Downer here, and I know we were talking about defenses flipping it back to offense, but our fourth down numbers are not, conversion rate is not good, right?
No, they're terrible. We're 4-14. We're the only team in the nation that has not converted a fourth down 10 times. So, I mean, that's definitely not good. You know, 4-14. And the thing is, there's some teams in our conference that are very good at it. And you know, the other thing I talked about this was the red zone. And I know Kyle and Matt, and you've all, you know, we've had this discussion, but this is startling to me. Okay, so we're 20 of 29 in the red zone, which might sound okay, but it's terrible. No other team in the nation has more than 6 empty red zone visits. We have 9. And here's something for you. If you take the teams that I consider to be at the top of the league, Memphis, Navy, Tulane, USF, and North Texas,
right?
They're 131 of 137 in the red zone.
Oh, my God.
So they've not scored in the red zone 6 out of 137 times, and we've not scored in the red zones 9 out of 29 times. So that's just that shows you what we're up against. We got to get better at that. We really do.
That was one of my things I wanted to ask you guys is I know Holton talked about that on another show about the very fact of how difficult it is. And Matt and Stevie, I wanted to throw this to you and your other guys can comment too, but we all know watching and coaching football and all that over the years, playing football, whatever, that how difficult it is to – if your offense, you know, those lanes, everything gets, the field is shorter. It helps the defense out at that point. But having said all that, does that come down to play calling? Does it come down to execution of players or both when it comes to not converting on in the red zone?
Both.
Yeah, it's got to be both.
You look at the triple, you look at the speed option call. It was a great play call. It should have been a touchdown. Caton just didn't execute. He pitched it at the wrong time, and again, it got stripped. That would have been a touchdown. Had he timed that pitch right, that would have been 6. Exactly. It was there. So that's execution. But a lot of what we're doing, lots of times is play. Sometimes you got to rely on plays, not play. You got to rely on players, not plays. And there's lots of times in the red zone where we got one-on-one matchups with our wide receivers, and we have talent at receiver, and we just don't like to throw jump balls. We don't like to throw one-on-one passes, jump balls. You know, we did it one time to Yannick on our first possession. It was incomplete. It was almost caught, and we ended up scoring on a QB sneak. But we need to do a lot more of that. That's where our advantage is. We have good receivers. We have good tight ends. That's where the advantage is. Just throw some one-on-one balls up and let the receiver or the tight end go get it. I think we're trying to be too cute with some of our play calls in the red zone. We're trying to out-scheme them rather than just letting players make plays. And then when we're not, we're going too conservative. We're just trying to run the ball right at them, and we can't do that either. I do like using the option down there. I wouldn't be hesitant to do that because of that turnover. But it's both. But Stevie, Matt, y'all go ahead, JR, too.
Yeah, I mean, you can call the right play call, and if they don't execute, your personnel doesn't execute it, you know, it's not going to work. And vice versa, you've got to know your personnel and what at the time. Matter of fact, there was a call made in one of our games early this year, perfect play call, but our guy misread the hole and didn't go to the right hole. So, I mean, it's a little bit of both there, Dave. I agree with Kyle on that. When you're in the red zone, like you said, it gets tighter, and it's really hard to make the exact play call, but your personnel's got to be there too.
Yeah, you also have our running game. That kind of is a direct effect as well, the fact that we're not very productive in the running game.
Right, and I think a big part of that is it's kind of like a lack of creativity a little bit. I mean, it just seems like, hey, let's just try to pound the rock up the middle, and like, how about we try something different in the running game? I mean, look, we now the speed option has looked good at times, and you know, after I went back and I looked at that play, Kyle, the one you just mentioned, that was a good play call.
It was there.
It wasn't executed properly, unfortunately. But I don't think. just don't think like the running it up the middle is the winning formula for this team. Again,
no.
I think for us to run the ball effectively, I think it has to be you set up the run through the pass, stretching the field horizontally and vertically, and you create lanes versus the other way. And I've always felt that way about East Carolina because the fact is, you know, we just don't get we don't get O-linemen like Georgia. We don't get O-linemen like Alabama.
Right.
I mean, we get a certain type of O-lineman that excels in more in pass protection, especially this year. So I just think there's different ways to go about it. Now, I'll tell you what, the bye week comes at a perfect time for us this year.
Yeah.
It couldn't have come at a better time. You're coming off your conference win. You have a big game coming up on the road against a good opponent, and now you get 2 weeks to prepare. And look, I have a lot of faith in Blake Harrell. I really like Blake as a head coach. I think he's very tuned in to what we need to do to win. And my hope is that they really take a look at this, especially these red zone struggles, with a lot of extra time, and they just find some different ways to clean it up.
Yeah, guys, that very thing. Let's do some comments really quick while we have so many people. Thanks again to there's so many people watching and listening tonight. William Will says, hell of an effort by the defense. A much better play on third down. Kenneth says, defense wins championship. Our defense continues like this. We'll be a contender in the conference. Axel says, but it goes against reasoning to go for it on fourth down, which ECU did at least two times and failed both times. He said, if you had lead and trust on your defense, you don't go for it on fourth and kicks. Well, here's the thing.
There's two ways to look at that, Axel. If you trust your defense, you may go for it on fourth down more.
Correct.
And the reason for that is because you trust your defense. So if you give them a short field, you trust them. Right. So there's two ways to look at that. So I have no doubt they trust our defense. I just think it was interesting that Blake said on that field goal, fake field goal. If you go listen to his press conference, he said we went for it on fourth down a couple times, didn't get it. He said, to heck with that. He said, next time we're down there, I'm kicking the field goal. And then he had second thoughts about kicking the field goal because he was scared about getting it blocked, so he decided to go for the fake. Right. So I did think that was interesting. It'll be interesting to see what his approach is going forward, if that's going to continue, where he said, to heck with this. When we're down there, we're going to take the points. And, you know, there was a 4th-and-1 play where I was screaming to kick the field goal. And it was relatively, you know, close down there. And
the Murphy Center in, Kyle?
I don't even remember, to be honest with you. But I was screaming to kick the field goal, and we went 4th-and-4th down and didn't get it.
Yeah, we was like we had a second down – in short, 3rd-and-1, and then we had a 4th-and-1. If it's the same, we could have kicked there was one in the Murphy Center.
It was a chip shot field goal. It was in the second half. It was to the point where it would have made the game 24-6, and we didn't go for it. And I think also some of the thought of that was, if you don't get it, so what? BYU Army doesn't have a high powered offense. They nickel and dime you, and so make them go the distance of the field, even if we don't get it. So I'm sure that was some thought into it too. But at some point, take the points, because, you know, in that game, a couple of field goals, that game, you know, if it was 27-6 earlier in that game versus 21-6, that game would have been put away. Because when we did have that one last score and keep it, that was in the fourth, but when we went up 28-7 or 28-6, it was ball game. Nobody was worried at that point.
True. We got some more coming in. Let's see. Robert says, Army coach looked demoralizing at post-game presser. Didn't really answer any questions. Never saw the fake field goal coming. Well, Pearson, they ran Pearson out, and he redeemed himself after that muff punt against BYU. Yeah. Man, that was brilliant, brilliant. And I was going to say, hey, Matt, I was going to say, back in your day with Coach Logan, I know a lot of people say that with trick plays, that means you don't have talent. Trick plays are great if you know when to use the trick plays and not – I'm not saying do trick plays like all the time during the game, or they wouldn't be trick plays, right? But I thought that was brilliant, and that pretty much was the dagger in the heart to Army. What did you think?
I thought it was a perfect call.
for that time, because I'll be honest, I just sitting at home watching that game, it never once occurred to me to fake that field goal. I didn't even think about it. And clearly Army didn't. And you know, Pearson is, he's tiny. I mean, he's tiny and he is quick, lightning quick. And he's perfect to run that play with, because he could just kind of slip in there and behind the offensive line, you don't even see him. So great call. Like, the, you know, we talk honestly, we will be critical at times, but we'll always give credit when credit's due. And that was a great call. And I even, you know, take it a step further, like, how about we get some little crossing routes to Pearson? Or maybe just some little, you know, screens.
I wonder if he can't catch, because he didn't play wide. He didn't play wide receiver any at Oklahoma State either.
I mean, he is quick. Good Lord, he looked like a playmaker.
He's a guy that if he gets around the edge, man, he is gone. He's like, I don't know his 40 time, but he's Chris Johnson fast. It feels like, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but as far as his speed, man, he is gone when he gets the ball. He's the kind of guy, if you had him on another team and he's playing against East Carolina, he makes you really nervous when he gets touches that ball.
He must not be able to catch, because if not, we'd be utilizing him at wide receiver, and so would Oklahoma State.
Well, are you watching the BYU game, Kyle? He did muff that punt, so maybe catching's not his best thing. But, man, I was happy for him, because he made up for it. You know, that was bothering him, and I didn't have a problem with it, because I love the aggressiveness, but, you know, hopefully this made him feel a little bit better.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't – and I love the call, because I did not want to kick the field goal there. I was screaming punt it. I wanted to punt there, because I didn't think going for it on fourth down, I didn't want to give them a short net field if we didn't get it, and I did not want to kick the field goal. Kicking the field goal was the last thing I wanted to do, because it was a position where, you know, that kid has a history of getting some blocked, even though he's got a pretty big leg. He had one blocked against Coastal, which really wasn't his fault. But that was a 50-yarder, 51-yarder, something like that. And had we kicked that, I thought it had a really good chance to be blocked. Or, and then, you know, you run it back and it's a one-score game. So I was glad to see it faked. I really was. My one comment on that would be this. He's not our normal holder. He's our backup holder. And so, you know, you can make him your primary if he can do it well, and then you might be able to get away with it again. But we've put it on film now. I would like to save that for maybe a different game, maybe a Memphis or a Tulane. But the only way you're going to be able to get away with that again is if you make him your primary holder. Because as soon as they see him come on that field, they're going to be over there. Whatever they say, Roger, 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 or white, whatever they say to look for the fake, they're going to be on it.
I agree. Hey, did y'all think that looked like a Jeff Monken coach team? To me, I mean,
like a tired football team to me, Joe.
They should have known that was not the regular holder. I mean, they know Kyler's the second. I don't
think, from what I understand, I don't think they saw, and that maybe that's you can blame the coaching, but I don't think they saw that he was.
Well, that's a problem, though.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, I think he's frustrated because he just doesn't have the pieces. I mean, he doesn't have the quarterback. We talked about that before the game, preseason preview. And his cornerbacks are tiny. Like, both Smiths could have, you know, they could have had a field day against them, but we didn't do it. But anyhow, he doesn't have the pieces this season, I don't think.
Dave, Emmanuel had a comment earlier that I thought was a good one regarding Yannick's touches. And
he needs 5+ touches.
Yeah. Great point. You got to get the most playmaking fans.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that, because I said I was going to ask you guys this. I was saying in the press box on Thursday night, I was saying Yannick Smith is like, he's on fire right now. He's a guy that no matter what sport you're playing, give the ball to the guy that has the hot hand. And I understand on defense, you could maybe double team him. And I haven't looked back.
Good. That opens other people up.
Exactly. Right. I'm just saying, my point is that he's the guy, your receiver right now, that's still playing with a hot hand. You got to give him the ball. So, yeah, absolutely, Matt. Very, isn't that right, though? I mean, Hauser have a great relationship when throwing the ball.
I mean, the only thing that, go ahead, Matt.
I was going to make one quick little point, and then I'll be quiet. If I was Yannick the other night after that Army game, man, as a competitor, I would have been like, you know, on my way home being like, damn, like, can I get the ball more? Like, three touches against these little corners? They can't cover me? Like, that's how I would see it as a competitor. So we have got to get him the ball more.
We're not getting the ball in our playmaker's hands enough, period. It ain't just Yannick. What the hell happened to Brock Faulding?
Yeah, exactly.
Second quarter, right? They were getting it. Was it the second quarter? He had like two in a row.
Yeah, maybe. But he ain't getting enough catches. The only thing, again, I'm gonna give the coaching staff the benefit of the doubt on offense. The only thing that makes sense to me is we are just so determined to get that run established because they think they're gonna need it when we play the two lanes and the Memphises of the world, and so they are just going to continue to work on it until we get it. The only way that the only way you're going to get better at something is to do it in real game situations, and I think that has a lot to do with it. But I'm kind of like, you know, mad on that. Are we coaching our running backs upright, or are we hitting the hole too fast every time instead of taking the time and doing cuts? And also, again, I'd much rather see us get up by a couple more scores than work on that running game, because like JR said, Yannick and Anthony Smith and Smith. Could have had a field day against the midget cornerbacks for Army. I mean, they just could have. And to the point that, you know, I think it was JR that asked that, like a monk and coach team. I think they're tired because I've watched Army play twice this year against Tarleton, then against North Texas. And he spoke at nauseam in his press conference on Monday about the Army or about the East Carolina game, Monken I'm speaking of, about how he thought he had a very tired football team and he was worried about the short week and the travel from New York down to Greenville because of how tired he felt they were after the North Texas game, overtime game where they played over 90 snaps on both sides of the ball. And I do think that contributed to that. I do think that was some of what we saw on Thursday night was a worn out football team.
Yeah. Kenny Curlers got a good comment up today about that pass Caden threw to Anthony Smith early in the game. A perfect pass. I mean, Anthony Smith, we talked about how he was butterfingers last week, but he made up for it this week. But that honestly, he could have turned that into a touchdown.
Yeah, you're talking about where he fell?
Yeah.
Yeah, had he kept his footing, that could have been six. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was the type of thing where like he needed to kind of get his confidence back after last week and then like so he struggled a little bit on that first catch, but he did make the catch, and then the second touchdown where he had to kind of adjust his route, and that was a hell of a catch he made there. Yeah. That was Anthony Smith, right? Do I have that?
It was, guys? It was, yes.
Yeah. So that was good. I was glad to kind of see him make a big play and kind of get himself back into a little bit of a groove.
And JR, you have a great point to make. Go ahead and make it.
I do. No, that was Kyle's point. I said he should say it.
Oh, okay.
Because it was brilliant. I never even thought about it for a minute. So I'll let Kyle. Can you read my comment, Kyle?
Yeah, I'm reading it right now.
On a short week especially.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes, a good point about them being tired. Yeah, they have commitments beyond just what the normal college kid has. You know, they're in the Army. They're there at the academy. They have a lot of other things they have to get done, whether they're playing football or not. Now, I don't know if they give them any kind of break as football players, particularly on a short week. Probably not. So, yeah, they were probably very tired Thursday because, you know, they don't just have to go to class. They have a lot of military commitments they have to do along with going to class, along with practicing for football. So, I don't think – that's one thing that probably going forward, you know, and Navy's dealt with it relatively well. It's probably something Coach Monken needs to get on the phone with the Navy head coach and see how he handles it, because you know, this is just year two for Army and the American. As an independent, they didn't have to worry about Thursday night games. So that's something that he probably needs to get on the phone with the head coach at Navy and see how, you know, how he deals with short weeks, because they did not handle it well.
I have another point to make, and I want to get you guys something that hit me Thursday night going home and on Friday, thinking more about it. How much of a factor do you think – I know we have Navy's playing a lot better, but the Service Academy's not been able to offer NIL. How much in that
world, in the world we live in now, how much of a difference? They already have a disadvantage to begin with, and now having that.
What I'm curious about and really don't understand is, I would say it's not a big deal if players couldn't transfer out, because another thing, they can't just go in the portal and grab somebody. I'm not sure how players are just able to transfer out of Army or Navy or Air Force.
They can.
They lost one of their best defensive players.
Oh, wow.
I think to Georgia, maybe? JR, help me with that. Does anybody know how Academy players could just transfer out?
Well, yeah, they lost Kanye.
Go ahead, JR.
I think he's looking up some way that he's froze up.
Yeah, they during the summer, and he.
Oh, he's got lag.
Yeah, he's got lag.
And now he's got audio difficulties. But anyway, yeah, JR, talking
Army degree will set you up for life. Oh, yeah, I'm on the mountain. My signal's not very good. So,
repeat what you just said, because nobody heard it.
Okay, I listened to a Jeff Munkin podcast where he's talked about losing kids to the transfer portal. So it does happen. And, he said that the Army degree.
We may never know.
Nobody wants us to know.
It's top secret how kids are able to transfer.
Texas A&M. No.
Here we go. Texas A&M.
Texas A&M. But yeah, apparently JR was saying they lost somebody to Texas A&M.
Yeah, but, that's frustrating.
I would love for somebody to explain to me how the academies are able to have players transfer. Hey,
Dave, look at this one comment up here. I think I said Awin in Florida. They're saying they can opt out of academy after sophomore year.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah. That is what I wanted to know. They can opt out of academy after sophomore year. Okay, so that's how they're able to transfer out. They need to somehow, if players can transfer out, they need to have a way where players can transfer in. And I that may be impossible because of the requirements of the academy. Yeah. But that is a shame that so they can't play players. They
should be able to get the portal. I don't understand why they can't. Because I would say, this is my saying, that I know what you're saying, Kyle, but what I would say to them is, okay, let's say that I'm a guy coming in, that would be my junior year, right? So that would mean that I would have to continue the, what is it, 4 years or 6 year commitment, guys? Help me out on that.
That's to the military, but the thing is, the academy requirements,
right,
from an academic standpoint, are so high. It's not just,
right.
I just don't think they're ever going to be able to do that. I think that there should also be, the gentleman from Florida was saying also is you can opt out after your sophomore year from the academy, whether you're a player or not. Is that correct?
He's answering your question about the commitment too down there, Dave.
Yeah. They're committed at junior year for 5 years. Yeah, 5 year tour.
Right. But he's talking about somebody transferring. He's talking about somebody that's already there.
I'm saying, yeah. Well, my point is can you, I understand that the academics as far as academies are way high. You can't take the players that, East Carolina, Alabama, anybody else can take. But there are some that are really smart guys that they could take. And I'm just saying, can you tack on that on the back end?
There's probably something to do with that first 2 years at the academy that's required for you. Yeah. I just don't think it's going to happen. What I'd like for that, the gentleman who's answering these questions to answer, is opting out after your sophomore year, is that for any student or is that for football only? If that's for any student, there's nothing they can do about it. But what I would say to that is, I don't know. It hasn't hurt them up to this point, obviously. Navy's been the standard bearer. Army won the conference championship last year, but you do wonder over time if it's going to start hurting the academies. And, I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, by the way, let's see. Eric Graham, is this the Eric Graham that played from Richlands? I believe it is. Kids that qualify for the academy aren't going to the school for NIL. I'm just saying, I know, Eric, I was just saying that here's my thing. I believe that if and I understand I'm not knocking the academy, so don't misunderstand me, but I'm saying for me personally, if they're playing against us, we should all have the same standards, meaning they should be able to do the transfer portal. And I understand about their commitments. I'm just saying, is there any way that you can put it on the back end? And it's the Army. We can pay. I mean, you should be able to pay players. I know they might see that as like hurting their academic standards, but I'm not saying hurt their academic standards. I'm saying keep your academic standards and make those guys, in other words.
Yeah, I don't really know that NIL is hurting them, because he does make a good point. The kids that are going to the academies they're not the kids really looking for NIL. They're committed to being in the military. They have size requirements already that you can't be so big.
Robert says academies carry a bunch of extra players more than anyone, maybe 170.
They do. That is 100% true. They have a prep program there where, you know, I don't even want to say JV, but yeah, they have huge rosters of players that you don't see that they can just kind of develop and feed in. So that is one advantage they do have over the rest of FBS.
John White says a commitment begins after their commission as officers upon graduation. So that's what I was saying. Like, in other words, if you're going to make that commitment, then I understand that they maybe in other words, even though it's technically their third year of being in college, dude, you're entering as your first year, like here. And maybe there's some people that wouldn't do that. But I mean, for me personally, I love the Army, Navy, and Air Force, as long as we're not playing them. And I have issues at the high school level about charter schools being able to play regular high schools and things like that, because we're not playing at the same standards. So it's the same thing with college for me. I would love, being how much I love the military like you guys do, I would just like to see it where they would be allowed to do that. But
well, that's across the board in college football now. I mean, when you look at the SEC and the Big Ten and the other power conferences, particularly the SEC and the Big Ten, and look at the amount of money they're able to pay players versus the rest of the FBS level. I mean, we're already playing at disadvantages. So the fact that Army Navy is a little bit more of a disadvantage, it was a good point by, was it Robert that made that point about the 170 man roster? Yeah, that does kind of help them a little bit. That is one advantage that they have that we don't.
Yeah, Eric's talking about, and I realize this, Eric, if a junior wants to transfer an Army, they essentially miss 2 years of military training. And that's why I was saying, I understand that point. I'm saying, in other words, if you're a junior and you're transferring in, then you have to tack on. You're at the beginning of.
You're a freshman. That's what you're saying. Even though academically you may not be.
Right.
So I don't know. That gets complicated. I don't know. Yeah, I don't really think there's anything they're going to be able to do about that as we sit here today. But maybe one thing that would kind of help things. Maybe just how about this? You go to Army or Navy or Air Force, you can't transfer out. Instead of being able to transfer out your sophomore year, you can't. You're there. You can leave, but you can't go play football anywhere else.
Yeah, Justin says, Dave, talk about charter schools. Our AD at Eastern Wayne won't let us schedule charter schools. Here's my thing about charter schools. So everybody will understand this is not political at all. I have nothing against charter schools. So let me, as a parent, I should be able to choose whatever school I'm going to, right? My kids are going to. My point is and I'm just going to make it out here real quick so people understand what I'm talking about. The North Carolina High School Athletic Association lets charter schools who can recruit any player they want to in their school, as long as they can get to that school, which again, I'm not against. I just feel like it should be a separate classification, that charter schools should be in their own classification. So if my high school at Martin County High School goes out and recruits players that are not in the district, we forfeit every single game. But yet we don't play against the same rules as someone in a charter school. And I'm not trying to make it public schools against charter schools, anything like that. I just have a strong feeling about that. That's something that's bothered me since day one. So,
yeah.
But anyway, okay. Let's see. Anyway, I wanted to make a point as far as
talk about Dave. I don't know.
Go ahead.
Okay. I thought you were just trying to think of something. I was just going to jump in with something I want to talk about. Fun topic. The drone show at halftime. Excellent. And it's a god dang shame. I censored myself there. That. Look, I'm going to tell y'all something right now. I get people have to work and they have to go to school, and it was a Thursday night and it was running at halftime. but just don't come. If you're going to leave at halftime, just don't come. Unless you have a legit reason, just don't come. Because 33,000 people in there at the beginning of the game, and I think there was probably maybe 10 to 15,000 at the end of the game. And next, I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm going to say this for next week, but 2 weeks from now, we play Tulsa on a Thursday night. I guarantee that's going to be a close game. History will say as much, and we'll get into that. I might say for 2 weeks after the Tulane game. But, you know, I'm going to encourage East Carolina, if it's possible, if that drone show, for everybody who saw it, loved it, and it's being talked about, a lot of pictures and video online, so a lot of people missed it. If I were ECU, if Minji's Bottling will pay for it again, and if the people who run the drone show are available to do it, I would do it again for the Tulsa game and start promoting it now. I don't know that you'll get any more people in the stadium, but you'll get people to stay through halftime. Because there's a lot of people who missed that are angry that they missed it. I know Bubba, our former colleague Bubba, missed it, not because he left, but because he was at the concession stands and he was aggravated with himself that he missed it. So if Minji's will pay for it again, Minji's Bottling, and if it's available, do it again for the Tulsa game and promote the hell out of it. I think you'll get some people to stay through the half. I also think it's going to be a really close game, so that'll help too. But it was excellent. If you didn't see it, see if you can find pictures or videos of it online. I mean, it wasn't half-assed. That was as good as it gets. I can't imagine it being any better. It amazed me that they were able to just put that together just one after another, from the different ECU logos to the patriotic stuff. It was I was amazed at how good it was. I don't know, Dave, I don't think you saw it either. You were in the press box. No, you weren't. Did you see it, Dave?
I didn't because I know. I saw the pictures of it, and I was going to add,
JR, did you see it?
I'm not seeing.
I did, Kyle. And it baffled me, like how it was.
Yeah. You know what baffles me is your internet service.
more top secret stuff that's being taken out by
the stuff to get out that. Of my drawer. Like, that's all.
Yeah, HughesNet. So Kyle,
are you using Chris Bateman's internet?
Was it Starlink?
See, you know, I'm on the mountain, and I'm normally in Greenville, but today
out.
I'm.
Go ahead, get it out about the drone show right now. We can hear you.
Oh, okay. I thought it was great. I was baffled at how they did it. I mean, I couldn't figure out how they did that so effectively, and it was very impressive.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like that they are just going to work on that one show. They do that, and then they're going to move on to another one. And just how they're able to put that together with the Skull and Crossbones and the Script Pirates and then the Soldier, and it was very impressive to me. And I hope I would do it again for the Tulsa game if Minji's will pay for it, and if they can get them here and promote the hell out of it. I think it'll get people to stay for the second half.
Kyle, you know, you make a good point about, like, I just want to touch on this really quick about people leaving. Like, what's going on with the culture at ECU right now where people leave at halftime of the game? Like, it's really bizarre. Again, I watched 10 hours of football yesterday and probably every conference, and very rarely do you see crowds, just especially when it's like a one touchdown game and you're winning.
Yeah.
Do crowds just bail out?
Well, it wasn't really a problem at the BYU game, a little bit, but not much. I think a lot of that was, Matt, it was a Thursday night and we had a 3-touchdown lead and it started to rain. There's still no excuse for it.
It was kind of embarrassing on TV, I'll be honest.
And I'm telling y'all right now, that Tulsa game is going to be close. It's going to be close. So we need everybody there till the 4th. I know we got to get through Tulane first, but the next home game is Tulsa, and it's a Thursday. And that's something else, too. Let me speak on this. I know TV dictates schedules. 4 Thursday night games is absurd. I really don't care how many we play on the road on Thursday. Before it's absurd, we can't have 2 at home. We have a fan base, unlike, you know, some schools in the American. We have people show up to our games, and 1 Thursday night home game is fine. One is fine, but 2 is 2 too many, or 1 too many rather. 1's fine, 2's too much, and particularly with it being Army, you know, anytime we get an academy coming to Greenville because of where we're located, if you play that game on a Saturday afternoon, you're going to have 40,000 in there.
Yep.
So we going forward, we need to just tell the conference, look, could you please keep us to one Thursday night home game? And please, for the love of God, do anything you can for the Academy games when they're in Greenville to be on a Saturday. I get ESPN dictates everything, and there's probably not so much we can do. There's probably not really anything we can do, so I'm probably just wasting my breath. But I hate that we have two Thursday night home games. One is fine, but I would definitely prefer going forward it not to be the Academy. Although, if we keep having these results playing Academies on Thursday nights, let's keep doing it.
Yeah, I agree with you guys, and I'll tell you what it comes down to. A friend of mine mentioned this off air, and I don't know if I can say, but we're at December 4th of this year, makes 10 years from the time that Ruffin McNeil was fired. And I'm not rehashing that whole thing, but if you look over the last 10 years, we've had a lot of losing, not making any excuses about that. But our culture needs to understand, and our fan base, I'm not picking on the fan base. I would just simply say to them, I would challenge them. And yeah, I had to work on Friday. I had a hell of a week and then a long weekend because we had a town festival. I'm not making excuses.
Yeah.
And I still went to the game and I got home at 12:30 at night.
Put Will's comment up.
Okay.
Okay. That right there drives me crazy.
Yes.
That drives me up the friggin' wall. I know some folks.
You're right.
They go to the game.
They don't buy season tickets, right?
They may or may not. I'm
some
not
do
sure.
And some don't. Yeah.
Well, no, I know some specific people, and you know them too, Dave, that go to the games and they don't come in half the time. They just stay out there and get drunk and claim to be big fans. And it pisses me off. I mean, you can do what you want to do. It's a free country. But I don't get it. Look, I like to party just as much as anybody, but game day is game day, baby. It's time for football. And get your asses in there. You go to the tailgate lot, and you sit there and get drunk and eat barbecue and sit out in the parking lot and then cheer on the Pirates. You ain't a freaking fan. You're not doing a damn thing to help the team. You're not doing, I spent my money. Well, so what? We need you in the stands to help cheer on the team's victory, and it makes the damn program look bad on TV when the stadium's half full and your ass is in the parking lot. So the people that want to do that, again, it's a free country. You can do what you want to do, but I think you're a moron. If you're going to the game, go to the game. If you want to get drunk, stay the hell home.
And get drunk watching.
Exactly. Get drunk watching on TV. I say what we do, and we really ain't nothing we can do for like the Epps lot, but any Pirate Club lot, make a damn requirement. You have to have you cannot return to that lot until the fourth quarter. If you do, you have to leave. Nobody can sit in the park. No loitering once the game starts. I know I'd probably go over like a damn lead balloon, but I swear to God I'd do it. No loitering on Pirate Club lots once the game starts. That'd eliminate most of that crap. But I'm not a fan of it. And there was another comment saying for us not to pick on the fans about the weather. Look, if you got a medical reason where you can't be out in the rain, I completely understand that. I totally 100% get that. There was a time in my life where I wouldn't have wanted to be out in the rain for medical reasons. But unless you're elderly or you have a medical condition, put on a poncho and get over it.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I tell you what, but my point to the whole thing is I would just say this, every season is different, but compare the crowds before 2015 and after 2015. They used to always stay. We used to have people that were, what we're missing still, guys, is we're missing the casual fans. And here's what I'm saying by that. Cal talks about people drunk. I'm talking about the people that do show up to the games, the people that maybe buy the season tickets because they go, ooh, look at this schedule. You've got NC State and you've got Memphis and you've got all these great home games, Army. And they're people that buy season tickets based on the schedule, right? So that's why when I talk about scheduling, people get mad at me for talking about scheduling inside the administration. They need to understand that we are, and they know it, a business. And the way that you help your gate is by having a strong conference. We have the conference games. You can't dictate that, but you can dictate the non-conference games. So people aren't excited when we play Campbell, but we had a decent crowd for that. We've been playing well. I also heard, by the way, guys,
that the I want to get your take on this, but the for those that are listening and watching and the panel also, I was one of my pirate friends. She said that she waited a whole 25 minutes in line for the concession stands.
Yeah, I'll touch on that, actually. Was that this week or BYU?
Army.
Yeah, there's no excuse for that. I'm going to touch on that. And normally, that kind of topic, Dave, about the concession stands, I would say, who cares? Let's move on. But I'm going to touch on this because I saw there's something firsthand, two things that pissed me off the other night. Me and Jessica went up to the concession stands when we first got there. I always, you know, grab something to eat when I go in. That's typically what I eat for dinner if it's a night game. And so I went to the stand. I got a couple hot dogs and a soda. The dude handed me one hot dog. This is two things. This is kind of more just, are you an idiot? Dude handed me a hot dog. Then he had another one, and I took the other one. And the guy goes, were both of those for him? No, dude, I'm stealing the effing hot dog. What the hell kind of question is that? I wanted to slap him. But here's the other point. Jessica was just getting a drink at another concession stand. And she, literally, the young lady who was making a fountain drink, it probably took her 3 minutes to make one fountain drink. My grandma, who's dead, could move faster than her. I don't get it. I don't. If you're that unmotivated, just go to the house. That's the problem. When you got people that are so unmotivated, they're sitting there taking 3 minutes to make one fountain drink. Yeah, you're going to be waiting 25 minutes at the concession stand, even though the stadium's half empty. So yeah, that kind of crap. That we need to improve on that. I don't know what you do about that. And then,
I told you the way that whenever you have the. They've gone cashless, not only because of COVID, because it speeds things up. But we talked about it with Ryan Robinson on our show when they have that at NFL games and professional sports. And we talked about this before. I think we did, if we didn't. But my nephew is a really big fan of movies, and he buys the AMC popcorn, you know, deal, $25 a year or whatever it is. Can we have in the Lake amusement parks, can we have it where – I buy a souvenir cup. I have one from an amusement park that I have from 5 years ago. I still have. I used to drink drinks out of. Give us maybe a seasonal cup or some kind of thing and pay a certain amount for the season. The same thing for popcorn, where all I have to do is if I show that I have that bucket, quickly give me the popcorn and get the hell out of there. The same thing with the if you have that, or like we talked about before, where you pay so much per game, like $10 for the cup, and you just go to the souvenir station and do your cup, and that will help out eliminate another thing. And it seems like I'm being critical when I say this, Kyle. You were talking about the unmotivation. I love charities. You guys know I do a lot of charity work and different things in my community in Greenville, whatever. However I can help. But when it comes to this situation, we have student groups and we have charity groups. Some people care, some people don't. They're just kind of like there. Oh yeah, I'm doing this game, and I'm not knocking all of them, but I believe that we need to look at maybe putting more Aramark professionals in there to move with the lines. I believe the Aramark people could do a better job, and I know that I'm getting crucified like I'm anti charity groups or anti-nonprofits. I am not. Maybe we can make donations to those groups on campus. But that's the only way that you're going to speed up the lines is to get Aramark people in there that do it every single day. And I would
suggest this. And then we'll get off the concession topic. Yes. The Coastal, now they were, you know, these things were free, so you can do this with paying. The common things that, you know, people are going to buy, popcorn, hot dogs, et cetera, why not just have them sitting out, let people grab them, then pay? So you don't have to make them. Just go ahead and pre-make a bunch of plain hot dogs because they don't put any toppings on them. You have to do that yourself. Go ahead and pre-make a bunch of things of popcorn. Go ahead and sit out a bunch of Gatorades on ice. Have it sitting out. Let everybody just grab it. Keep walking. And then pay after you get your stuff instead of having to wait for somebody to make it. But that's pretty much all I have to say about that. Is there any other points anybody wanted to make before we get out of here?
No, I'm good.
There is another topic that I came to mind, but we can save that for another time. It's not a direct topic related to the Army game or the Tulane game. It's just a but I, you know, would rather have Matt here to discuss that. So yeah, we'll, Yeah, so we'll save that for next time because it's not directly related to the game. JR, did you have anything else you wanted to get out?
I tried to watch all the American games, and I feel like Tulane, they're already running the ball well, and they played Tulsa, and the game was 31-14, but Tulsa really gave them a much better game than that. But their D line just got worn out in the second half. But now Tulane's freshman had 3 touchdowns. So, now we got that to worry about. And then Navy and Rice, Navy won 21-13. That was a boring game, and that score is indicative of the game. And then North Texas beat South Alabama 36-22.
Yeah, North Texas can't stop anybody, but their offense is great. I watched on the way home from the Bellamy Brothers concert I went to last night, JR.
First time North Texas. Okay. This is the game I watched the most of. Yeah. So, 55-26 Memphis. Memphis looked great. What, y'all can't hear me? Or you can?
You must not have been able to hear me.
Oh, probably not. Okay.
Hey, Kyle, if I said you had a beautiful body, would you hold it against me?
Absolutely not. I'd hold it against you, but I wouldn't hold it against you.
What I wanted to say about Memphis FAU is FAU went for it twice on fourth down, 4th-and-1 and 4th-and-3 from inside their own 30-yard line. They didn't make either one of them. So that's kind of why Memphis scored a touchdown both times. So that's why the score looks a little bit lopsided. But FAU is a great environment. We have to go down to Boca. They're gonna do their best to give us trouble. So I'm not overlooking that one.
Yeah, as I was trying to say, JR, on the way home from the Bellamy Brothers concert last night, I was watching Memphis and FAU, and you kind of made the point. FAU is probably a little better. At least they were playing highly motivated last night. And, maybe Memphis wasn't motivated after that Arkansas game. We'll have to see. But Florida Atlantic looked like they could cause some trouble for anybody on offense last night. But, again, how much of that was Florida Atlantic being highly motivated and Memphis not being very motivated? I don't know. I have to see Florida Atlantic play more as the season goes on. I do like their head coach. I think he's a good offensive mind.
Yeah, they snapped the ball fastest of anybody in the country, too. 19 seconds.
Yeah, we're at 23 seconds, right, Johnny, when we're doing the up-tempo?
I don't know if he heard you or not, Dave.
Yeah, we're snapping it fast. Yeah, but
the standards tonight.
I know we're not snapping as fast as they are, but I had heard it anyway. We can save that, as you said, for another time. Do you guys have any comments quickly about any of the games around the country? A lot of great games. That Georgia-Alabama game. Alabama, wow. And also the
UVA upset over Florida State. That was exciting to watch. UVA probably needs to be a little safer when rushing the field. It looked awesome on TV. Yeah, Stevie, it looked awesome on TV, but good God, I thought somebody was going to be killed. I'm going to call it now. Two things, and then I'm going to be done. I'm going to shut up, and we're going to get out of here. One, I think the American is really good this year, and I don't think there's a bad team on this in the league. UAB, but we don't play them. Charlotte's not very good, but they've had our number. But even the teams that you perceive as not being very good, Tulsa, Florida Atlantic, that are on our schedule, Temple, all three of those teams are dramatically improved from last year. So we do not have an easy game really left on the schedule, because I'm not even going to say Charlotte is, because they're going to be fired up to play us. So it's going to be a tough road the rest of the way. There's going to be a lot of close ball games, but I'm going to make a bold prediction now, and I'm going to keep saying it. I'm going to speak it into fruition. If we can win enough games where we're hot, you may be bowl eligible when Memphis comes to town. I'm going to call it now. We'll have our rush in the field moment when we ruin Memphis this season.
Sounds good to me. No doubt about
it. On senior day, baby. That's senior day.
November the 15th.
Very early senior day, but that is our senior day, because we have back-to-back road games after that. So I'm telling you, that's if you're Memphis and we're playing good football that time and they're still undefeated or one loss, top 25 team, sniffing the playoffs, coming to ECU – for senior day, just look out.
November the 8th, the week before that, we're playing Charlotte. Favorite team, Charlotte.
Yeah, and I don't like that either. I think I don't really like our home schedule this year. I think Charlotte and Memphis both have the potential to be huge crowds, so I hate having them back-to-back weeks because some folks can't come to games back-to-back weeks. But anyway, we've gone long enough, guys. I'm done.
All right, guys. Well, good luck to everybody, whatever you're doing this week, because we don't have a game. But we will, I assume you guys want to do a Wednesday night show. I hope so.
I don't see any need to it. We can talk about it off the air, but we'll definitely be back Sunday.
Yeah. Well, we can do one. We'll get out of here. Stevie, thank you, Matt. He was in a bad cell area. Thanks to Kyle, Johnny. Thanks to everybody listening and watching tonight. This has been the Pirate Football Playback as Army loses to the Pirates 28-6. And we'll be back with you very soon. Good night, everybody. And as always, go.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.